Gracias por escuchar los podcasts de Radio Exterior. Acceda a todos los programas en rtv.es/a la carta.
Most people don't know that this is Brazilian music because most people associate Brazil with samba alone. But this is Hector Villalobos, a piece for piano. Brazil, host of the 2014 World Soccer Cup Championship that lasts a full month from June 12th to July 13th, is greeting the event with less than usual enthusiasm. The spiritual home of soccer has been beset with transit strikes, protests, security concerns, criticisms about wasteful spending, construction delays, accusations of government corruption surrounding the tournament. Brazilian artist Paulo Ito seemed to summarize the situation with a street painting that he had done of a hungry child sitting at a table. It's been all through the media. A hungry child sitting at a table, fork and knife in hand, crying because on the plate in front of him is a soccer ball. Since last year, protests, albeit in diminishing sizes, have occupied the news from Brazil. We're delighted to have in our studio our friend, a repeat visit, Leonardo Martins Dias, whose work in international cooperation and development aims to achieve greater equality and reduce poverty. He's been a guest on our program before and has explained some of the ways he works to build bridges between the worlds of privilege and opportunity and those of marginalization and poverty, foremost among those ways by empowering community leadership. He's joined by Eduardo Zaldivar, a longtime colleague of Leonardo's and more recently a collaborator. Justin and I are delighted to welcome you both to the program. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much, Alison, Justine, Eduardo.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, Leo, you've just returned from 7 months in Brazil. And while we're eager to learn about the programs you are working on, we are also interested in hearing firsthand report and from you as well, Eduardo, about these protests in Brazil that have led up to the World Cup Games. Is it really true that soccer's heartland is not excited about this event?
Yes, some way it's true. Brazilian people are more aware about what citizenship is. They are realizing that they don't have the rights they should have. Education, health services, security, transportation, housing, jobs, efficiency in the state. And the end of corruption, mainly, are the reasons why people are on the streets and not so emotionated with the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, we've seen it, and we've also read things like for some of the stadiums, again, stadiums that are being built with public money, that they've gone over costs by as much as 300 times, mm-hmm. and delayed, using those delays as a tactic. So you're saying that Brazilians today have taken notice of their citizenry, because indeed one thing you have to say about Brazil is that there is less inequality now than there was in 1950, the last time the country held the World Cup. So there's less inequality. And in fact, in the past 11 years since the Lula and then Dilma's party mm-hmm. have been running, there has been an effort made to diminish the gap between the wealthy and the poor. And yet you're saying this has helped to fuel the sense of connection to the society and the
This is a clear example that the economical development of the country is not the same as the social development. It should be, in my opinion, it has to be, but it's not like that. So it's right. The inequality is smaller now. In the last 10 years, 60 million people passed from the base of the pyramid to the middle class, from poor to middle class. But the question is that what's middle class? Middle class, they are considering a new unidimensional indicator, and it's the money people generate each month, the incomes. But in my opinion, you have to consider in a multidimensional way. I mean, access to health, education, food, how many times people eat, how many calories they ingest each day. And if you consider all these indicators, I think that maybe the difference is not that big. I mean, they are middle class, but I think we should rethink about how to define and how to measure the development in order to assure that they are really a middle class.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, though, you did mention, because I'm impressed by the notion that, yes, Brazilians are, though, recognizing themselves as citizens and making demands as citizens for their rights to health care, education, affordable transit.
Yes, that's it. People are more aware about their rights, mm-hmm. About what citizenship is, about what the government have to assure to the population. And in my opinion, this is good. It's a sign of evolution, but we have a big path to cross.
Now, of course, Leo, as a Brazilian, you have your you are touched particularly by this. Now, Eduardo, you are a Spaniard, mm-hmm. who was there visiting while Leo was making his projects. What was your feeling about the Brazilians' response to the World Cup?
The most surprising thing to me when I was talking to people here in Spain is that I have been in the carnival season, and I was expecting party, but any time that more than 100 people joined in a square or in the streets or were going to a parade or whatever, the best claim for the people, the claim that everybody would follow is there will be no cup. And you could listen this absolutely everywhere. In any side of the city, in a concert, in whatever was happening on the street, anybody would shout, there will be no cap, and almost everybody would follow them. So I was surprised. You expect to find a developing country in a phase of growth, but in this case, I've been working in Latin America for many years. I felt like I was in a much more in a country with a much more difficult situation than the one we feel they have right now, because we've heard always has been good news about Brazil, but what you found there is people really angry with the situation.
And people were really angry, not just in the favelas, but elsewhere.
It's absolutely across all the any kind of people. Uh-huh. Even I won't talk about high society people, but people that live comfortably, overall, if you compare them with the people from the favelas, would join this claim as well. Everybody feels, I cannot talk about everybody, but anybody could feel familiar with the idea that the World Cup is not benefiting directly the people or benefiting the society, that it's only a business.
And yet, are they going to follow the World Cup, do you think, to follow the competition once it gets going? I would sort of imagine so, but maybe not.
I think
you,
yes.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But
because maybe they've made their point. I mean, it's made the international headlines. You know, their outrage at the, and is the outrage is it particularly at the cost overruns, the general money spent on this when there are other things that money should be spent on, and it's not being spent on those things.
Just for a few figures, since you're mentioning money, we'll just say it's 8.2 billion euros are being spent for the hosting of the World Cup. And then again, that's when basic social services are poorly financed. That's public money. And these projects that are being financed with the public funds are going to private companies to build the stadiums. One question, football stars. I know there's Niemeyer, but I've also heard that sometimes even the mere notion that these football stars who earn millions of euros or dollars, who are put up as models and idols, but yet who offer no real future vision for the youth, is that also being questioned these days in the protests? Have you seen that coming as a question? In other words, why should I aspire to live like a Niemeyer when I can't even get a job as a waiter or a clerk?
I remember I was expecting to find a lot of graffitis and posters on any wall regarding the World Cup, but the only thing that I saw, or the only one that I remember, were quite ironic about these football players, about any star from any country. I don't know if that's a sign of what's perceived in the people.
Many of the young people and the children, they have these guys as their model.
Yeah.
Sometimes we use the football as a tool to engage the young guys in the social projects, you know.
But that's different. It's different from using football and what they love and using the notion of you can live like a millionaire and, be...
Sure. That's one of the things in Brazil, in this inequality that you have, that used to happen. Anyway, the conditions of the football players are very, very high all over the world.
Well, that's certainly true. Well, we're going to get now to some of the specifics, because, again, you were not 7 months in Brazil just watching what was going to happen with the World Cup and watching the progress on the buildings under construction. Your specific work, Leo, involved various projects. But before we describe these projects, again, I'd like you to describe the methods, because I introduced you. You are consultants on developing cooperation and development as one of the UN Millennium Goals, to reduce poverty. You're trying to construct bridges. And I've read in some of your on your website that you have developed a series of methods that you use. Could you describe these methods that you have created to bridge the communities in the favelas, in the slums, and the privileged world outside of them, the companies, the state institutions, the educational centers? And you referred to it as social technology. But what I see is a very, very specific series of steps.
Yes. One of the first steps is to assure the security so that you can work, so that the companies can support the project. They are not worried about the impact, some impact in their brands.
How do you do that? How do you give safety or security to?
I myself cannot do that, but I work with pacified communities. Some of them are not pacified. I work with pacified and yet to be pacified, but the communities where more companies support us are the pacified ones.
Okay, now what does the pacified mean? Because that's it has a history in Brazil and in Rio, let's say particularly.
in 2008, this government began a strategy to pacify the favelas, to occupy the favelas. So the police body has another kind of training program, more oriented to people, more social, more oriented to the social development, and they take control on these favelas so that the narcotraffic cannot be developed there as it was before. But there is a doubt about what is happening. We just don't see the weapons, or the narcotraffic still being a reality inside the communities.
Mm-hmm. So, but you do look in one of the first steps before you institute a project and get it going. You look for the places that would be the safest for for the people that you bring in and for the people that you call from the community to take part in as well.
Yes, like in this last case, we were working some people from the World Bank, from the British Institute of Technology, from the UN. We were inside the community learning, exchanging knowledge. So we have to assure that the security is a reality in this place.
And when you say inside, sleeping inside, eating inside, living?
Eating, everything, not sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We were not sleeping.
And again, I will just, I have an advantage. I will just, Leo went with a group or brought a group of Canadians, I think they were mostly, was it?
Most of them Canadians, yes.
Canadians to Rio for a week-long training program. Is that
yes.
And so, you first ensured that they were safe. Then another of your steps.
Well, the social technology begin with the security, and then we use the language of the community, the rap, the hip-hop, the football, as a tool of engagement. Then we try to bring visibility to the people from the community so that they could be the protagonists of their change.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to slow you down for a minute because these are really big. These are very big.
Yes, it's because the social technology is bigger, and mm-hmm. then the methodology of this project is inside the whole social technology.
Mm-hmm. So when you mention, though, again, so local, you use the local language. When you say you use the local language, whether it's the music, the hip hop or rap, the graffiti, theater, sports.
Yeah.
Is that as a means of connecting, as a means of opening the conversation, or is that actually the programs that you use, the programs that you do?
It's a mean of opening and connecting, engaging, mm-hmm. and also respect their culture. Mm-hmm. That's very important.
And when you say giving visibility to the invisible,
okay,
what does that mean? How do you, what does?
For example, doing this video, and then this video is being seen all over the world, and they are the protagonists of this video as well as other stakeholders, as I am as well. So, for example, in this community, one of the biggest sports brands in the world is doing a project inside because they saw this video. They were looking for one community in all Rio to develop a project, a very technique square for sports, and they saw this video and they feel that they could work with Fafa, this leader, one of the leaders. So it's an example. Tonight will a program from Importada will be being shown at in the night, and when we went there to record, to do this documentary, the same. I brought leaders with who I'm working, and they were interviewed, and so that they are the world, and also in Rio they can be empowered, because if they are in this kind of material, the diffusion includes the Brazilian and the local in Rio bodies, respect them more. They're empowered.
Now, again, having seen the video, and our listeners will give your website at the end of this program, but you were in several different favelas in Rio de Janeiro. And there, in addition to the, I mentioned the Canadians, in addition to the, what we'd call representatives in one sense of privilege, who are interested, though, in being trained in empowerment programs, in cooperation programs, in doing some good, then we also saw the local leaders, again, the favela leaders of the communities in various, and you mentioned Fafa, who had been involved in drugs years before and has
No, Fafa.
I thought I saw one of the subtitles.
Andrea, another leader who was participating was in the narcotraffic before, but he's not anymore.
Exactly.
He was in jail, then he left.
Exactly. So when you start to empower people who either had never known power or had known power as drug kingpins, but now bring it to good use, it is a very encouraging.
That's part of the social technology. They are a model inside the community, as you were talking about the football players. All the young guys and the children, they see that they fight against a system where they don't have a place. So once these guys left the criminality and begin to do social projects, the guys began. The young children began to think, "Wow, if they can do it, I have another perspective. I can do something like this. I don't have to take the guns." You know.
That's wonderful. Let's listen to a little music that is the opposite of what Leo Martins Diaz is doing.
Up in the sky,
well, sorry about that. This is, of course, the official song for the World Cup. And it would seem this official song, We Are One, sung mostly in English by American rapper Pitbull and Puerto Rican superstar Jennifer Lopez, with a final verse in Portuguese by the Brazilian star Claudia Leite, illustrates precisely what Leonardo Diaz combats in his cooperation work, that is, the lack of connection with the people that it seeks to address. This song, like the one 4 years earlier by Shakira for South Africa's World Cup, does not use the tremendous musical talents and traditions of its host country. Well, I did see the video of the work that you did and the group with Lead, but Justin?
Exactly, yes. What was the work that you did with Lead? What was that project, or what did it consist of?
Okay, it's experiential learning to empower leadership for sustainability. Leaders from grassroots leaders who are from the communities and other leaders who are still working with sustainability in the world, for example, in the World Bank, came and we worked together. One of the objectives is to facilitate a process in which people realize that all of us, we have lots of knowledge and experience that must be considered when we are thinking about the solutions. In this process, it's very important to dissolve ourselves, to put ourselves in other shoes, to break... I mean, break barriers, social ones, communicational ones, economical ones. No, I remember, for example, the first day, one of the grassroots leaders hugged very strongly a girl from Canada and kissed her in his face, for sure. And I saw that she was not comfortable, but she was okay. The last day, everybody was hugging, and you know, it was kind of, you could see the emotional bonds that was created. So it's kind of team building. United we can influence more. It's very hard to work with sustainability.
How much time was it spent, did you feel was spent in finding a common language? You mentioned this initial, it seems to me common language is one of the most difficult points. Because I imagine a fellow from the World Bank and his PowerPoint presentations, or her PowerPoint presentations, and, for example, a community leader who wants to set up a kindergarten, or how difficult was it to find the way to get these two parties to communicate and to find a common language?
That's a good question, Alison. This program takes 1 year, and this session, this last session this week, was in the international session, and this is the end of the program where we were applying knowledge that we were working with before. So, for example, before we arrived the first day to the favela, we did a small training program about cross-cultural communication. It's about sensitizing and influencing inside as well. I got to Brazil 1 month before. I was almost every day working with the people from the community who will be participating. They were a bit nervous. I don't speak the language. They will think I'm dumb. No, it's not like that. So little by little, and then the first day using capoeira. It was a presentation of capoeira. It's a local language. And they saw how the Canadians was impressed about the capoeira. And you begin to break these barriers, no? So it's not difficult, but you have to think about it, and you have to use energy to do that, no? In order to create these emotional bonds I was talking about, no? And it's also important to get to this point. We need authenticity, no? Something that it's not very common nowadays. So we are always trying to make people be authentic, no judgment.
But it seems to me, from the having seen the video again, and I recommend it, and Eduardo, you might also be able to say that the people who have chosen to take part, in other words, you are operating with people, working with people who chose, whether they were from the community or from outside the community, to take part in this experience, so that there was goodwill. There's a tremendous amount of goodwill to begin with. But what were some of, what were, for example, what is this lead? This is sort of hovering above us. Eduardo, perhaps you could...
Maybe the main difference is that there is many people with goodwill trying to work with these communities, but communities... And their leaders are reluctant to people that go and tell them what to do or what they should be doing or what's good for them. The main point and the reason why energy flows in both directions is that in this kind of programs that Leo does, they feel listened. It's completely correspondent communication continuously. And there is room for many people to work in the favelas, not only these people from international bodies or from people from Canada was going there. Leo empowers the people within the favelas, within these communities, by taking to this program company leaders, people from the government, from any kind of authority that should have any relationship with them. But what he was talking, every communication is authentic, and every communication is absolutely bilateral. For the first time, these guys, they don't only go to speak and see what they can do with this market, let's talk in these terms, but they listen what these people want and are not, they won't do anyway. So it's a program with a great scope, but it's very deep in the results, because every single step that is taken here, it's somehow they feel like they're going one taking the hand of the other. So it's not a great change that they feel. They move together slowly at the very first steps, and they are able to achieve good results at the end because they feel like they are moving together.
Would you say, Leo or Eduardo, but would you say that the members of the communities that you visited, that you have a relationship with, it's not just visiting, you have a relationship with, know best what they need?
After the program, you mean?
After or before?
No.
That they know what they need best, do you feel? Or do you feel that part of your work is involved in opening their minds?
I think they have always known what they need, but now they know better how to achieve it.
Mm-hmm.
When I was doing some interviews to follow up this program, to deliver the results of this program to the rest of the fellowship that we have all around the world, what they would tell me is that they're able to create networks with people they were not connected before. They are able to talk a bit of the language of the outskirts of the favelas. Now they can see the face of somebody they know. They are able to call them on the phone or write them an email, and they feel much more engaged or connected, at least with them. So they know, of course, they know what they need, but now they know better how to achieve it. They feel empowered and they feel connected after this.
And what were some of the individual projects that were proposed some of the problems that, because I imagine in the communities, they said, well, we would like to see this change or this solution brought. For example, whether it is, we obviously jobs is an issue, and you say that that's part of, you're constantly building those relationships so that jobs are created. But I saw, again, there was there are images of a kindergarten. What is that project? That was in one of the several favelas in Rio.
In Babylonia.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a kindergarten in Babylonia, and this kindergarten was closed. It was about to close, and we were trying to go there and to bring some visibility to this project and look for new partners.
Why was it going to close?
Because the government was making a new acquisition. The government was asking for a new model of working that would cost for the NGO 50% more each month than the operational cost they had before. So they closed, but they found another way to still working. They just don't work with children from 3 to 5 years anymore. But they are still working with children from 6 to 18.
Mm-hmm. And so, but you found in the, if you helped them to get through this crisis in the kindergarten, the crisis for the NGO that found that suddenly...
From one side, for people from lead, from the lead members, from the professionals in sustainability who are coming to Brazil, it was an experience for them to understand the difficulties for example, to run a daycare center inside a community. And for the community leaders, the local people like Tanya, for example, she's in the video doing an interview, it was an opportunity to have visibility and to enhance their network. So one of the first things I do when I get there is the contacts, the business cards, like say, change now, do you have Facebook, do you have, okay, let's connect, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should tell us your website, so our listeners who are interested in knowing about in finding out more can visit it.
Okay, my website is leonardomartinsdias.com. I think that maybe you should say it in proper English.
Leonardo Martins Dias. It's Leonardo Martins Dias.
Terrific. Well, thank you both so much for joining us. Are there any concluding... I know we've barely touched on your work. I hope that you'll be in Madrid for a few months now. for the summer. So perhaps we can repeat this and continue. Will you be doing any work in Madrid?
Yes, yes.
Chabolas, not in the favelas.
Yeah, Chabolas and with universities and business schools that are interested about this model of developing training programs, experiential training programs. It was a pleasure to be here and a pleasure to come again. Maybe the last message. This program is about listening, no judgment, comprehension, to put ourselves in other shoes, authenticity, to think out of the box, cross-cultural communication, to deal with the unknown, persistence. All these abilities are abilities that a leader have to be, you know, have to have. So when you create these emotional bonds for the business, in the same way it's customer orientation, because you are understanding your customer so that you can develop new business models more inclusive and more oriented to people, so that you can do your business but the good as well.
Thank you so much. Again, you may have noticed that both Eduardo and Leo come from business backgrounds but have transferred some of their interest into training and cooperation. Thank you both so much for coming.
And
thank
Allison, before we heard the song from the, well, it's the anthem, right? From the World Cup.
So before we heard the anthem, let's hear a little samba. I'm sorry, but it's a samba for the World Cup. It's the Tatu Bom da Bola by Arlindo Cruz that accompanies the 2014 World Cup mascot.
Ele brinca na pelada, no bobinho, show de bola, lá no baba, arrebenta no rachão. Balança pra lá, balança pra cá, explode o nosso coração. Balança pra lá, balança pra cá, em cada comemoração.